This is Gaten the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Gaten the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode 53 of Gaten the Mecha, I bring you an analysis of character acting. Recently, I've been on a bit of a trend looking at animation. Last week, we looked at the animation Fire Force. And generally, on the podcast, I have been speaking about animation a bit more in the moment segments and a few other places. But in today's episode, I want to do quite a big focus on a big part of anime and animation, and that is character acting. So in today's episode, what I want to go into is what exactly is character acting, or at least what do I think it is anyway, and what is its intention? And then, as always, similarly to our Fighting Sake episode and many of our animation episodes, I will be giving you some of my recent favorite animation examples. Before we do get into the episode, I did promise that I will try to read a review or a comment each week, and there's more than one, but I am strictly keeping it to one a week, so I'll read one next week. But this week there's been a nice comment from Beans Don't Scream, and that is saying, "Super smart podcast," with a nice surprised face with the colon and the O. Thank you very much, Beans Don't Scream, for the very nice comment. It's my intention to try and make the podcast somewhat analytical. It's not, well, I hope it doesn't appear as pseudo-intellectual at times, although I know it does sometimes. I know the bitter end episode went maybe a bit too far, but I will try to keep that up. Thank you very much for the kind words. Similarly to Bean Don't Scream, if you do want to leave the review, feel free, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do get your podcasts. It doesn't need to be a review per se, it can be a comment on your podcast app. Any of that helps out a ton. Lets me know what you guys think about the show. It would all be really appreciated. And so let's get into the episode. This is episode 53 of Gaten the Mecha, an analysis of character acting in anime. As always, I will give you my alerts for this episode as we are getting into it, and that will be a very minor spoiler warning. It's not my intention to be spoiling the plot for anything. If you do consider some of the things I am discussing spoilers, then by all means, do not listen to those parts. Feel free to skip around and move around the podcast to both save time and avoid spoilers. But the anime which I will be discussing, I'm not really intending to give away plot points, just really talk about what they try to do, and that might relate to its context. I should say the anime which I will be discussing in this episode are Liz and the Bluebird, Kaguya-sama Love is War, and the Garden of Sinner series. Although for the Garden of Sinner series, I'm only really going to be talking about one film, and that is the second film out of the 7 or 8 of which there are. And so just again, this is a very minor spoiler warning. If anything, spoilers are going to be kept to a minimum, but there may be some plot points when talking about what the Sakuga or animation is attempting to do. On previous podcasts, I have discussed how the anime scene is very different to the live action scene, and I'm not really intending for these episodes and many to come to talk really in depth about the industry, because that is something which I'm still learning about, and there are so many things which I don't know about the anime industry, proven through a lot of the news that has come out lately. So it's not my intention to be some industry expert, because I'm not one, but it is quite easy to tell on the conceptual level even, and when you just look at the different components that differ when it comes to animation and live action, that there are very distinct differences. And one of those are the almost physical limitations and general limitations which come with live action versus animation. On both a physical level and a physical level, actors can be seen as a limitation. One, when it comes to a live action film, you have to pay for an actor. You need to give them a script, they need to learn lines. And actors physically have limitations. They can't do everything. A stuntman can't do everything. But I hope you see my point in how animation has a lot more potential for doing things which live action doesn't have the ability to literally do. There is only so much you can do within a live action film with your actor, whereas within animation and anime, our characters and actors, in quotes, can be pushed. They can be pushed to the maximum extent. You can mold them how you want simply through writing something in within a script and animating it in a certain way. Animators, animation directors, scriptwriters, directors, storyboarders are all almost responsible for pushing this character, this supposed actor, to the way of which they want it to turn out. Animators have the job in the space of anime and animation as a whole to bring life to this very story and bring life to the actors. If anything, the animators become the actors. They have the job of bringing to life every movement, every action, every reaction, every jitter in their face. All of it is the animator and the animation director's responsibility. With that being said, it must be agreed that animators, as well as animation directors, have a very massive job on their hands to represent and bring forward a very convincing performance. And that needs to obviously be in line with the vision provided. And the reason why it needs to perform and perform in this way is because it, arguably, when it comes to acting is, as I just stressed when it comes to the importance of actors in both live action and animation, it is the cornerstone of narrative almost. It is the cornerstone of every story of which we have, not just the literal existence of a character, but I think it goes a lot more than that. It's the representation of a personality or an emotion. It's representing an emotional position that is almost arguably the role of a character. And so that's how valuable characters are. And so we can't really put that aside or stress less how important acting and character acting is in animation. The interesting thing about character acting in anime and animation is that it has the ability to almost transcend the human experience or even assimilate itself with it, especially when you consider anime as a medium which versus most has more supernatural elements or things which we wouldn't get in real life. There are many unrealistic things in the space of anime. In almost any or a lot of battle shonens, we have very conquered unrealistic things like power-ups and such. And so there is this responsibility for animators creating these almost non-human performances. It's not always with the intention of creating the human experience, although I'll be honest, in this podcast, I'm not really going to be discussing things which aren't very tailored to the human experience, maybe to an extent, but it will mostly be based on emulating that and the importance of character acting in emulating the human experience. Before we get to the core of the podcast, I do want to address briefly a very vague definition of character acting. I think, as this podcast will show, and the reason why I didn't say it at the beginning is because I think it is very hard to define. I don't think you can really define it in one straight phrase, similar to acting even, but I will say that character acting is animated acting. But the advantage that character acting in the space of animation has is, as I've formally said, the ability to become one with the human experience and the ability to morph a character and a personality almost. And so we have the ability to kind of just morph that character as far as possible. And so with that analogy done, I think it is very essential that I get some examples of good character acting, in my opinion, and things which have really stood out to me lately. And so our first anime example is Liz and the Bluebird. This is an anime which has been recommended to me for basically the entire time of which I have been on Twitter. I knew of the film prior, but I didn't really take much interest to it. I haven't taken too much interest when it comes to Kyoto Animation films. There isn't a reason really behind it. I just haven't really got to them yet. But I have started to make that movement, and Liz and the Bluebird was the second work I've seen from Kyoto Animation, the first being A Silent Voice, which I only saw about a month or two ago. But Liz and the Bluebird is a film directed by Naoko Yamada, also famous again for a film Koe no Katachi or A Silent Voice. And if I just kind of get more into Liz and the Bluebird, I think an interesting thing about Kyoto Animation, which serves our analyses really well, seems to be their design philosophy, or what feels like their artistic philosophy. This isn't something that has been said in an interview or anything, so I'm not quoting anything. This is just what I feel and what I feel like I experienced when I first experienced their work. And that is really capturing the subtlety of life's activities. I felt this when I was watching, and I'm still watching, Surune. And it's also something I felt in A Silent Voice as well as Liz and the Bluebird, which we're speaking about. But it's capturing the very subtle ways of life. There are explosive and very, when I say explosive, I don't mean in terms of action, but a lot more emotionally explosive moments, as we'll explore in this episode. but life on the whole, when it comes to the Kyoto Animation Works, feels a lot more to the core. It feels very down to earth. And this subtle and tranquil feeling that comes with life is something which is very prominent in Liz and the Bluebird, and throughout Yamada's works outside as a whole. And this isn't necessarily only achieved through its aesthetic, although I agree that is a very big contributing factor. There is a very big amount of bokeh, or lens bokeh, which is basically the blurring of the background. There's also a good amount of lens distortion as well, that's also to capture that very real lens look, which you would get from a genuine cinema camera. But some of my favorite moments of character acting, and where I think the subtlety of life comes from, some of my favorite scenes in Liz and the Bluebird. A good example of this would be the opening scene of the film, which is mostly animated on threes. This is something which I never noticed, to be honest, and I was actually really swept away when I was looking at this frame by frame in my frame player on my phone. Probably because I was very fixated on the music and just taking in the entire aesthetic when I first watched it. But if we just get back to animation, I think I should, for the sake of anyone who's new to animation, get into a bit of the 101 when it comes to threes. Threes in the context of 24fps is one keyframe for every two in-between frames. So if you were to put it in frame by frame, you would see a change in drawing from one keyframe to another. So you would see a new drawing, a different motion, or say eye movement or hair movement from the character. And then when you go across the next two frames, what you'd see are basically, they would look still because those are in-between frames. I don't know if I described that well enough, but that is what that is the best I can really explain it. So just to squash that down, that is one unique drawing for every two almost same drawings as that very same keyframe. What I love about threes is that it creates a lot more jittery movements, and this is something which I was thinking about a bit more, and I really do agree with it. I know it's kind of arrogant to agree with myself, but what I'm trying to say is that what I was thinking about is that human movement doesn't really feel as if it's in ones. Ones is a unique drawing for every frame. If you were to put in frame by frame, it's new drawing, new drawing, new drawing, new drawing. It is very exhaustive to do as well, and that's why a lot of anime isn't done on that. That's not really the complete reasoning behind it, but it is part of it. But it creates a lot more jittery movement, and ones, for example, even twos, wouldn't be able to emulate that very nervous feeling which we get at the beginning of the film. Mizore as a character is one which is very secluded and almost in her own bubble a lot of the time. She's focused on what she needs to do, but at the same time, she feels distracted at the same time, distracted by the world around her and everything which can be happening, which is what affects her performance. And in the case of Liz and the Bluebird, I really like how that personality is established within its animation. We get very jittery hair movements at the beginning of the film, and her eyes even move in threes, which I think is very interesting. Three shouldn't be considered slow movement, because when you watch the film, it doesn't appear slow. It just appears very subtle. It appears, again, like human movement. If you were to put your hand in front of you after you drank a cup of coffee, for example, as I almost did for this episode, you would see that your hands can't stay still, and that is similar to her. She isn't completely still and stuck, and her movements don't feel smooth because her as a character is not smooth. She is rough around the edges when it comes to a performance, for example. Again, I think this just does contribute to the design philosophy or artistic philosophy which I discussed before, which I get from Kyoto Animation, which is the subtleties of daily activities and the very, I want to say, calm, sublime nature that is life. That is a bit more of an extravagant and maybe overexpressive way of describing it, but I do get that sometimes from the films and sometimes from the works which I've seen. I would say that's more Serene, but that is another conversation for another day. A similar strategy is used when it comes to the character acting of the performance with both Mizore and Nozomi. I would say this is mostly applicable to Mizore because she is the main focus of this performance, but it can be applied to Nozomi as well. The performance can arguably be seen as almost the apex of the film. It's the moments which we've all been waiting for to see Mizore bloom, as well as Nozomi as well, but I would assume more of Mizore, but it's the opportunity to see her grow and reach her potential and see what she's been working on for what is most of the film. But what I find interesting about this is similarly to the opening, which you wouldn't consider as, it is important nonetheless, but I would definitely say that the opening of the film isn't as important as the performance. It's still a very important part in establishing Mitsure and Nozomi's personalities and their almost contrasting personalities as the arguable Liz and the Bluebird, although that does switch as we venture further down the film. But what I found quite intriguing was that the performance is also done in three. It wasn't as if this part needed to be smoother of some sort, and that is because of the elegance which comes with performance, but it's also the very natural and down-to-earth and human feeling which comes with performance. When humans try to create art, they are at their best, arguably. When they are creating and fulfilling that creative urge, that is humanity at its peak. And I think animating in threes is a very good decision at that point. I think it's also a very nice message when it comes to Nozomi and Mitsure performing in threes. Not really in regards to the story and narrative, but what it represents. I did discuss this in the previous episode, but that was on the notion that more frames does not equal better. I've been standing for this for a long time, but yeah, in summary, more frames does not make a better animation. And threes should not be seen as suboptimal in this moment, because I would say that this is using threes almost at its absolute best. This is one of the best applications for it. If anything, a smooth performance would be rather disingenuous to the characters. It wouldn't be who they are, it wouldn't be that human, and it wouldn't really represent the realistic and almost humble characters that we get in the Kyoto Animation, I want to say universe, or worlds, which are brought to our screens. It definitely shows the connection between the performer and the music, and the human connection and love of the arts. My second example of what I would define as really great character acting would come from Kaguya-sama, Love is War. And I'll be honest on this one, I don't think, or the word Sakugo animation doesn't necessarily go into my head straight away when I think of the term Kaguya-sama, or when I think of the anime Kaguya. Not because I thought it was badly animated in its first season or this season, but I think I really started to realize it with all these gems which would appear every episode in the second season. And it really pushed me to investigate a bit more and try to understand the production a bit. Again, nowhere near expert, just some casual reading and some Sakuburo searching and surfing. But I think that I really appreciate Kaguya a lot more for what it does every episode and the show it really puts on. A perfect example for me would be episode 5 of season 2. But to set the scene for episode 5, I can't remember the entire thing, but it's when Ishigami comes along to Kaguya to talk about true love, and he has his weird and almost very uncharacter-like discussion with Kaguya about self-interest when it comes to love and all that sort of stuff. As I just said, this is very out of Ishigami's character, and I think most of you would probably know what Ishigami's like. He is the complete opposite of that. He doesn't really discuss love, although that is probably the main theme of the show. He's rather, similarly to Mitsure, he's rather in his bubble. He's very, almost what you can call a typical media gamer-ish, but he even hates that. Ishigami is a very deep book, But just to get into the animation side of things, what I found really valuable from the scene, and one of my favorite cuts in probably the entire season and show, was this one cut, one cut from Toshio Kono. Ishigami's hand basically moves in ones. As I said, ones is keyframe, keyframe, keyframe. It's unique drawings for the entire thing. His hands move in ones from his side all the way to his heart. The cut lasts about 36 frames, and that is pretty much 1.5 seconds. And that means that there are 36 drawings, literally, to show Ishigami's hand moving to his heart, which I find really valuable. But what I think is really valuable about this cut, I'll be honest, I don't have oodles to say on this one. But what I think is so valuable, although it's such a short moment, is that through its animation alone, we're able to create a completely different persona for a character. And that just shows how weighted animation is when it comes to our perceptions of certain characters and their emotional positions. Ishigami is a character who would never do that. He isn't smooth, he isn't slick, he isn't the typical shoujo protagonist guy. If anything, he's the complete antithesis of that sort of motion and personality which comes with that very motion. And so viewing that, I think, is just really valuable for understanding character acting and animation and how important it really is. To be honest, I'll say a lot of our understanding of a character comes, although, yes, we do talk a lot about writing, and writing is very valuable. But that writing can only truly be expressed in combination to how its said scene is animated. I don't feel as if writing would be able to be communicated as well as such if said scene wasn't done. And although this shot is very short and a drop in the water when it comes to the entire series as a whole, which is amazing in my opinion, it really does prove how valuable character acting is when we think about anime as a whole. Another amazingly well animated moment, in my opinion, when it comes to character acting in Kaguya is this very great moment from Hirokazu Ebina. This is also done in episode 5 as well, which I find really impressive. I would say episode 5 is probably one of my favorites, but Ebina is able to capture this very amazing burst of emotion which comes from Chika within the series. And that is this beautiful scene, which is Chika crying over Miyuki's very questionable singing voice. One is able to spot Ebina's animations if you look through the entire series in the Sora and Joke as well. I do believe Ebina's worked on some stuff like Yu-Gi-Oh! As well here and there, but I'm not too sure. We also must give Ebina a lot of credit for this episode as well, because they solo animated pretty much this entire skit. I don't know about corrections and animation directors when it came to this moment. Similarly to the example when it came to Liz and the Bluebird, Ebina uses lower drawing counts in order to capture that emotive experience and this burst of emotion which comes from Chika as she wells up and gets all choked up over Miyuki. Again, similarly to Liz and the Bluebird, I think this very emotive experience is captured when using threes and fours. Fours is just one more in between frame to threes when we're transitioning, so every fourth frame is a keyframe. And so this creates a lot more, again, jittery movement, which I think comes out of emotion, which comes out of one who is crying and isn't really thinking about staying still and looking presentable. I would say lower drawing counts really capture sadness really well, and they really capture, I know it's really hard to say that an animation looks fragile, but I would say animations with higher drawing counts look more confident. I think this is a very unique turn for Kaguya. Kaguya Season 2 has explored a lot more emotions of our characters, and really tried to go into depth as to what these characters are all about, and what is at the core of them, as opposed to just referring to the comedy, although comedy is still the very big part of that, and if I am to go a bit more down in on that route, an anime which has often prided itself with very bold moments and very in-your-face haha moments, although I don't even mean that sarcastically, I genuinely do find them funny. But I think Kaguya's greatest character acting moments come from when they go against the norm and contrast what Kaguya's usual vibe is, which is this normal, jokey school atmosphere. This can also be, if we just refer back to the cuts, that same sort of emotion can come from the lack of shading and the light flare which comes from it. Everything feels a bit more real versus Kaguya, which is often feels as if its attempt is to escape the real and escape the reality which is high school, with these very surreal and comedic moments. But this feels like a real slam back to reality, which I really enjoy. We get this light flare, the light is shining in our eyes while Chika is crying on the stage. And then I think what is also funny is how it bounces back to a very Kaguya moment, which is the almost chibi face of Chika crying on the floor, just being normal Chika again. But it's those short gems which really bring out the real emotions which come from Kaguya. It's that contrast which is so valuable. And now onto our final animated example that comes from Kara no Kyokai, Garden of Sinners. This is a movie series by Ufotable, although I'm only going to be speaking about, say, two moments from the entire film series. I do apologize, I did say movie 2 in the opening, which I will be speaking about, but I'm also going to be speaking about a brief moment from movie 5, but nothing too spoilery at all. The two animators which I will be focusing on are Masayuki Kunihiro, someone who I have discussed in earlier podcasts, and then Tetsuya Takeuchi, also a very great animator, one of the aces of Sword Art Online. But some wouldn't consider running character acting, but I'd say it's very, when you look at it in detail and what the attempt of a running sequence usually is and the emotion it involves, I think it's very fair to call running a part of character acting. It is action to an extent, but there is a lot of emotion that comes through running and a lot you can actually convey when showing someone run, as these two films have shown and these two animators have. Both animators, I'd say, are masters in making these very convincing running performances. They feel intense, they feel expressive, they use the environment around them, which is so valuable. I don't feel as if that's done enough. I usually love in anime when a setting or a scene feels as if it's very intentional. I discuss intentionality almost too much on the podcast. It really does feel as if someone went through the process to think about, okay, if I put said scene in an environment, what will be present in that and what can aid the emotional conveyance in this scene? And I think that Kara no Kyokai is probably one of the few films or series which does this to its absolute best, or it does it really well. If we talk about Kunihiro, who is a very prominent ufotable staffer, as I've discussed before, you know it from Kimetsu no Yaiba, Fate Stay Night, and the rest of it. This is all done on twos, it's not done on anything crazy. But it's really the small details which really make this a beautiful run sequence. This comes from movie 2 when Kokuto is running from, I'm just gonna call it someone because I don't want to spoil the film, but it makes it a lot more frightening in how he has all these micro movements. There's a lot of attention to detail when it comes to the background and the environment. He is in a forest running from someone. And what would you think of when it comes to a forest? You would think of the trees and the obstacles and how there are pathways within a forest to make it walkable through in an environment which is in proximity to a city. And those things are more of not necessarily animation decisions, but it's how it's animated on top of that, which I think makes it valuable. Kokuto is constantly moving in this erratic manner. Every time he's looking behind himself to see, is this person behind me? Am I going to die? And we get a really interesting moment when he reaches the pathway where he jumps across the railing, and then you see him fall down, he gets up, and out of fear, rather than just running straight off as you would assume someone would do if they weren't scared, he in fact stays to look around, he sidesteps a bit, he turns around, he jitters a bit more, and then he runs off. It's those things which I think are really exciting for the sequences. We also get a very big variety of run patterns as well. It doesn't feel like a run cycle at all, which is a loop of said running stances. These are multiple stances because we get these different stumbles which are incorporated within the run sequence. As someone who's nervous, you're not thinking about how you're running, you're just running in different ways. You're running because you need to run, as opposed to running how you want to almost optimize speed. And so we get that incorporated through these various stances and drawings, which I really appreciate. There's also a part which Kunihiro incorporates, which Tetsuya Takeuchi also incorporated within their part, which is holding onto the railing as well. I don't know why they do it within these films, but it really does appear as quite effective. It feels as if they need to depend on something, they need something to hold onto because it's been that intense. And then we go on to Tetsuya Takeuchi, one of my favorite animators on this project as a whole, but they still have some amazing contributions towards the whole series, some of which are fights, but I think this running sequence to start off the film is a very great one when it comes to movie 5. Takeuchi's run sequence at the opening of this movie has a bit more of a smoother feeling versus the Kunihiro style, which is a lot more rough and very jittery. Although it is done on twos nonetheless, it doesn't really have that very same feeling, and I'd say that's because it is still paying a lot of detail and attention, or a lot of attention to detail when it comes to the environment which it's in. It's within a city, or at least within a town, they're running between sides streets, there's wind in their hair, they're running and dodging between people, which is actually shown. And although there is a sense of danger, which we still do get with a lot of cross-cutting between our main person running versus these gang of men which are chasing the person, it still does feel a lot more open on the whole. A few interesting things to pick up on when it comes to the sequence are the different run patterns of the multiple people chasing our other person being chased. everyone runs different. And so thinking that through is also something which I find very important. It's running isn't something which comes the same to everyone, and there isn't a optimal way to run. If anything, you want to create a much more natural run, which appeals to different people, if that makes sense. Not really appeal to the audience, but just show that running differentiates between people. But what I love about the run is that as the time goes along and as the film progresses, we get different run patterns for our characters as they get more tired. We get another one of those signature Karen no Kyokai, put your hands on the rail moments, which I really love. And overall, you just see very different running stances as the characters progress. And so that ability as an animator to come up with different stances and emulate tiredness within a run cycle, I think is also something which is very praiseworthy. Also, another thing which I found great was how Takeuchi compensated for the characters running through the corners of the side streets or the back streets. It doesn't feel modular at all. It's a very interesting transition. It's a sidestep through. It's a walk or run a bit too further than the entrance and then remember you have to go back in. It's that sort of feeling which feels very exciting and natural. I think that brings us to a very interesting place where I can conclude this analysis, because I know I have been spouting out a lot of example here, example there, what this does, but how does this all relate to character acting, and what is character acting through these examples? Character acting plays a very important role for me when it comes to anime. For me, I would say it's probably the best way or almost shorthand way to communicate the feelings of someone. How do they look? How do they react to things? And it's very hard to gain a full understanding as to how someone feels through writing alone, especially as dialogue is something which there are hundreds of lines in a film. And although we can take a lot of things from that, there is only so much we can learn from that. And so the acting and visual representation of those feelings is something which I find really, or I find a lot easier to understand and connect with as an audience member. And I know Sakuga can often be viewed as these crazy flashy fights and a very big and monumental thing. And that isn't wrong per se. I'm not here to gatekeep the answer as to Sakuga and what it is and what it should be. But I would say that character acting is probably a lot more valuable to narrative and stories as a whole. Fighting Sakuga is relevant, yes, but character acting allows us to become a lot more closer to, or allows our characters to become a lot more closer to the human experience, and that is a shorthand method of us understanding characters to the maximum extent. It allows me to analyze characters, because similarly to how one would not only analyze the speech patterns of someone, but they would analyze their body language. And if we think of character acting as a language, is a very fundamental part of understanding the medium. And so the core of character acting is resembling and communicating the human experience, and allows art to finally imitate life as is, or even imitate it in a way which we can understand, which is very important for us as an audience. And so that is the analysis for this week. I know there was a lot of sidestepping in this episode, not just in regards to the character acting. I just think character acting is something which is very hard for me personally to put my finger on exactly. I do think it is a bit of a vague area when it comes to animation and anime as a whole. But I think it's a nice thing to start understanding. But this podcast anyway has been an attempt for me to kind of come to terms with it myself and try to understand it in a way of which I can communicate to you guys. And so, ironically, let's go on to the In The Moment segment and talk about something which is a bit more flashy. Let's go on to the In The Moment segment and talk about one thing which I have been watching this week, which is The God of High School. If you are new to the In The Moment segment, it's very simple, no need to worry. All I do is I talk about, for about five or a few more minutes, about what I've been watching this week, and one of them is The God of High School. I'm going to try and avoid spoilers for this, but let's just say it's a massive tournament arc. There isn't a better way of describing this than, yes, big tournament arc, loads of fighting in two episodes. Am I enjoying it? Yes. I know there have been some criticisms here and there that it's a bit silly and it's a bit, oh, it's breaking cliches and all of that, and I honestly can't care. because I think, honestly, for what it is, I've had a lot of fun and it's doing what it does best very well. A good example of this would be the appearance or the first appearance of the animator Keiichiro Watanabe in episode 2. He puts on an amazing show and I can't hold back how good I feel about this moment. I don't want to get too into the Sakuga and the technicalities of it because I've spoken about that for basically 40 or 30 minutes or so. In summary, Keiichiro Watanabe is just a great animator. I really love how some of the smears were basically detached. When I talk about smearing and the movements of some of these characters when running, some of the legs literally weren't put together. That isn't a bad thing. I did tweet not too long ago about Hunter x Hunter and Norio Matsumoto and how he literally detaches some of his models for the purpose of smearing. And seeing that in Keiichiro Watanabe kind of sent me back to that. There is a lot of discussion about Keiichiro Watanabe being one of the best animators right now and one of the best of the web gen animators. I kind of do agree. There are loads of picks as well, and it's not really too much of a competition. But those cuts really did send me back to some of the great animators, which we talk about, like Norio Matsumoto, for example. The opening and ending, I like the ending a lot. The opening is a bit over the top, but it does have a fun feeling to it. It does give me a burst of energy, which I've been needing. And I think it's just sometimes you do want to get away from the very tough analytical stuff and just let yourself go for 20 minutes and watch some people fight. And that is my experience with God of High School. And so that is a very messy in the moment segment done for this week. I have enjoyed the God of High School, honestly. And I do like an anime which I can just have fun with, and I'm finding it fun, and I think I'm going to keep having fun for most of the episodes. So let's move to closing thoughts. I did really summarize what I said at the end, but let's just get to closing thoughts and talk about character acting one final time before I wrap up the show. Character acting, as I've said, is something which is very hard to put your finger on, but I think what it can do is very important and very valuable. It has the ability to capture human emotion almost at its peak, or it has the ability to do it as well as possible. Because of the different role of animators versus an actor, we have the ability to maximize this experience. We're able to maximize the subtleties which come with said experience. For example, the beginning of Liz and the Bluebird, the very secluded sort of personality of a character like Mizore can be captured by using different drawing counts. And all these different choices allow us to optimize the experience and optimize this shorthand which is communicating with the audience to create this satisfying experience which is somewhat human-like. It also has the ability to completely distort this idea and create emotional positions which we didn't really expect from characters. Good example in this episode would be Ishigami in Kaguya-sama episode 5. Animating in ones was a very good choice for completely going against what Ishigami is all about. But emotions can be explored and understood very well through animation alone. And this episode isn't an attack on writing per se. Writing is still very valuable, and I encourage myself to analyze writing and narrative and stories because that is a very fundamental part of it. But it cannot be ignored that animation is such a fundamental part of anime when it comes to expressing emotions, and this is done through character acting. Thank you for listening to this episode of Guest in the Mecha. That has been episode 53. Hopefully you did enjoy it. I have had a bit of a fun time. As I did say before, I know I did go on a bit of a few tangents here and there, but I think it was kind of necessary in some senses because character acting, I think, is a difficult thing, and I'm still getting my head around it, but I'd love to do another episode where I look at it maybe with a bit more experience looking at it or a bit more understanding of it. Now we go back to the what am I doing next week, and I don't know. I know I say this almost every episode, but I did have an idea last time. But this time I really do not have an idea. I'll come up with something. I have a few ideas here and there, and I'll tell you guys when I'm ready. Thank you, Bean Don't Scream, for the comment. If you do enjoy the show, feel free to leave it a review, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or leave a comment or anything on your podcast service. I try to check them when I can, and it would be very appreciated if you do so. And so that is the episode for this week. Hopefully you have a great day, week, month. I don't know why I say month these days, but I do, because it's 2020 and we need all the goodness we need all the goodness this year. But thank you for listening. I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Gas in the Mecca. The music in this production goes as follows. 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Difference by Chasers Gaming.